Welcome to Discovery's podcast. We're glad you're joining us today. If you'd like to know more about us, you can check out our website, dc2.me, or follow along on our socials. And now, here is this week's sermon.
Well, good morning, Discovery. My name is Zach, and I'm one of the pastors here. Delighted to get to be with you this morning. One quick thing before we get into today's sermon. Last week, we shared a video on behalf of our elders, just kind of sharing the position of some of our church finances right now. My impassioned plea to you is that for those of you that call Discovery home, if you have not yet seen this video, would you please make it a point at some point today or this week to watch that? If you're like, where do I find that? You can find that on YouTube, on our website. The QR code's on the back of your chair. You can actually pop in and save that for later, but would love to ask that of you. If you're like, I'm new to this place, do I have to watch this video? No, you do not. I'm so glad that you're here. And I would just say we're coming out of a series that we've been in the last few weeks just talking about our catchphrase. And if you've missed those, maybe one of them today that I would just want to make sure that we highlight as we get into our teaching. This is a place where we really believe that you can belong before you believe. So wherever you're at on your own spiritual journey, if you're like, I don't know about this whole Jesus thing, I actually don't even know about this whole church thing, I'm just looking for some hope. This is a place where we're really glad that you're here. And as we are getting into today's teaching, today is a one-week interlude between a couple of series. Every year, we like to just sprinkle throughout the sermon calendar a couple weeks to focus on our global partners, and today is one of those global Sundays. I'm just curious, by raise of hand, how many of you have been through Discovery to go visit one of our local partners in the room right now? Yeah, a handful sprinkled throughout the room. As we're getting into the day, I just wanted to share with us who they are, who our global partners are, and where they came from. And so I'm going to put some photos on the screen behind me, but I just wanted to walk us through so that we're all on the same page. Meet Dan and Christy Rich. These guys are our oldest partners here at Discovery. Christy and Lene Spicer, who is a member here at Discovery and is currently on our elder board, they taught Spanish together at a high school down in Parker way back in the day. And as Dan and Christy were going into the mission field and beginning to move around, Lene brought their names to Discovery and said, hey, would this be a couple that we would consider partnering with? They work with an agency called SIM, and they are now stationed in Paraguay. They've moved around a little bit within the country, but this has been a place, for those of you that have gotten to go and visit Paraguay, that is legendary. And we've got a group that's getting ready to go right after we get into the new year of 2026. Those are the Riches. Not long after, as a church, we began supporting the Rich family, we got introduced to the Dochis. And the story of the Dochis is this. Uli Dochi is Albanian, native Albanian, and Albania was just post-communism when they were finally letting the first couple groups of missionaries go in. And so another Discovery member, Adiel Brazov, was in the very first group of people that got to go into post-communist Albania with another gal, college friend, her name was Nikki. And they go in and they're starting to meet these students, and one of those students is named Uli Dochi, and Adiel and Uli hit it off right away. After that trip was done, Adiel came back to the U.S. Nikki actually got to go back on another trip to Albania, and she and Uli ended up hanging out, like for decades. She's still there. She never came back. But they've now had a couple kids and have just been a part of this kind of first wave, this first generation of Christians in the country of Albania. And they got involved with CRU, which is a campus-specific ministry, largely working with college-age kids. When we started supporting Nikki and Uli, the way that CRU works is you support the missionaries, the people. And one of the downsides of that is when those folks move on, if they leave that particular campus that they've been at, your money follows those people, which for us, we love supporting the work that Nikki and Uli are doing anymore, the stuff that Uli's up to in the country and in Europe as a world leader. It's incredible. But we really wanted as a church to keep the value of context. We wanted to be able to go back and keep visiting the same places and the same community and get to know the people there. And so while we continued to support Nikki and Uli, we actually said, can we just support the campus that they've been at, which is the campus of El Pasan? And right now, the CRU staff that are there are Gadis and Shelly Menka. They're incredible folks, and our intent is, regardless of who is at El Pasan, we're going to continue to support that campus through CRU. Those are our friends in Albania. Let me introduce you to our friends in Compton. Bob and Susan Combs, and these are their kiddos. Rebecca and Steve Bennett, also some folks who have been a part of Discovery. They knew the Combs since they were in college. Susan Combs was actually roommates with Steve Bennett's sister. And as she and Bob were getting going, they came on staff. They were in the area of Compton. They said, it would be really cool if we did a reverse missions trip. What if having folks from Broomfield come out to Compton, what if we brought kids from Compton out to Broomfield? And if you have been newer to Discovery, you might not know the playground that's built right outside was actually put together and constructed by a bunch of young folks from Compton that came out. And the sound panels that are in this room constructed and put together by a group of folks from Compton as they came out. Bob and Susan work now with an organization called Navigators, and they're all across the globe, incredible group of people, but it was only after those trips, as I understand it, that we became financial partners with them. We've continued to learn so many things from Bob and Susan. The community garden that they have that sits right on the border between two rival gangs, we've continued to learn about what does it mean to be peacemakers in practical ways like that. When you hear Bob talk about social enterprise, what it means to offer a job to somebody by way of sharing the gospel. Absolutely incredible. We love the way that these folks think about how they go on mission. Next up, our friends in Costa Rica. Jake Brown, back in the day, used to be young and cool and work with teenagers, just like me. I totally empathize. And he loved taking groups of kids down to Costa Rica. And he got to know a pastor there named Pastor Jesus. Jesus is hilarious. And they love just going back to the same place, working with the same people, because for us, context matters. Well, over time, that trip grew quite a bit. And as Discovery, we said, well, not only would we like to take teenagers, but we'd actually love to bring some, whole families. Can we have whole families come down to visit Pastor Jesus? And Praying Pelican is the name of the missions organization that we work with for that particular trip. They said, well, you can, but we actually have some needs right down the way from where Pastor Jesus is. Would you consider working with a second church with your family trips? And they introduced us to a guy named Pastor Nelson. And so now we do trips every few years, some with just our teenagers that will go and visit Pastor Jesus and work at his church, others, families that will go and visit Pastor Nelson. And since we're talking about our global partners, it just feels like a good honorable mention to say this organization of Praying Pelican. They are their own missions organization. They help coordinate trips all over the globe. They're the ones who have really helped us curate the pilgrimage that we take to Tulsa oftentimes. They're also the ones who helped us put together the trip we did this year with our friends in Compton, going to the Apache Reservation in Arizona. Love the work that they do. All of this is done with Discovery. This isn't just staff people that are like, let's just pick random things and go. Hopefully you can hear it even in the stories of where these partnerships came from, that we work with global partners because we are a global people. We're not just a global thinking church staff. We're a global thinking church. And so as these names have been brought to Discovery and as we've pursued this work, even the team that continues to maintain these relationships is not a staff team. We have a volunteer team called our global team, and they do work throughout the calendar year, connecting, planning trips, being with, on phone calls, all the things with our global partners. And one of their values, which actually is a value of our larger church, but it is the value of the global team, is that we value dignity, solidarity, and reciprocity. And as we're going through these global Sundays that, again, we've sprinkled out throughout our calendar year, about a month ago, we had one of these, and we talked about this value of reciprocity. Today, we wanted to hone in on the idea of solidarity. And so to get us into our teaching for today, I want us to turn in your Bibles, if you have them. If not, it'll be up on the screen, to Acts chapter 17. We're going to start in verse 16. And we're introduced in this area to a guy by the name of Paul. And Paul was a very excitable Jewish dude who at some point in his life got to meet the person of Jesus Christ and then spent the rest of his life sharing that with everyone he could. This is one of those stories. The longer Paul waited in Athens for Silas and Timothy, the angrier he got. There's all these idols. The city was a junkyard of idols. He discussed it with the Jews and other like-minded people at their meeting place. Every day he went out on the streets and talked with anyone who happened along. He got to know some of the Epicurean and the Stoic intellectuals pretty well through these conversations. Some of them dismissed him with sarcasm. What a moron. But others listening to him go on about Jesus and the resurrection were intrigued. That's a new slant on the gods. Tell us more. These people got together and asked him to make a public presentation over at the Areopagus, where things were a little quieter. They said, "This is a new one on us. We've never heard anything quite like it. Where did you come up with this anyway? Explain it so we can understand." Downtown Athens was a great place for gossip. There were always people hanging around, natives and tourists alike, waiting for the latest tidbit on most anything. So Paul took a stand in the open space at the Areopagus and laid it all out for them. "It's plain to see that you Athenians take your religion seriously. When I arrived here the other day, I was fascinated with all the shrines I came across, and then I found one inscribed to the god nobody knows. I'm here to introduce you to this god, so you can worship intelligently and know who you're dealing with." What is solidarity? If you look it up, just a simple definition of solidarity: unity, agreement of feeling or action, especially among individuals with common interests, mutual support within a group. Two big ideas stick out here. If we could just simplify this definition: one, there is something in common or in agreement between us. Two, between us, multiple people, a group. And this idea is certainly not foreign to our cultural moment. We love the idea of solidarity, finding things in common, the thought of a unified room. Man, I think whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, I think we all have that in common. We hate war in any form. We hate poverty in any form. We hate hate. If we could just get along, so many problems would go away. That is almost a universal belief. Some people just love to fight. But I think for the most of us who are sane, when it comes to actually living out a life of solidarity in this world, the word complicated doesn't even begin to cover it. And why? It would be a lot easier to have solidarity if the world wasn't just so darn full of people. But it's not just that. There's another significant driver that's unique to our cultural moment that affects solidarity. Algorithms. Algorithms are awesome. They're trying to figure out who I am. They're trying to figure out what I like and then expose me to other things that it thinks that I will like or be interested in. That sounds innocent. Like the way that that could lead me towards creativity or towards greater solidarity with other human beings. They're also regularly forming my worldview. June of this year, 2025, was the first time in United States history where the majority of Americans were not getting their news from a news outlet, but were getting it from social media. First time that flip has actually happened. 50% of us are getting our news, 53% of us are getting our news from social media. The younger you are, the higher that number drives. 53 was the average. There's a few significant things that I think are worth looking at as we're thinking about this idea of solidarity that means. Social media, these algorithms, even news as we're consuming it, will show me exactly what I ask it to. As I'm a creature of creativity and community, it will show me those things, but I am also a creature of fear and anxiety and offense. And when I begin clicking on things that feed those things, suddenly my feed becomes flooded with more of those things. Because our attention is short, if I can somehow internalize a message within about 5 seconds or less, the algorithm is doing a really, really good job. But it's not only doing something to me, it's doing something with me. I'm using it to oversimplify the world around me. I'm trying to understand as quickly as possible because I'm anxious. What is going on? And so in narrowing down what I'm seeing and narrowing down what I'm inviting myself to think about, I'm oversimplifying. And it's not just some insidious AI robot that's doing it. I'm partnering with it on my own. And this oversimplification, this shrinking of the world around me, and in shrinking the world, I'm shrinking myself within it. Think about it like this. Have you ever had somebody who, like, you didn't know super well, but you were getting to know, and suddenly they pop a question like, "Hey, what news station do you listen to?" And you really get the idea that underneath it, they're trying to figure out, what camp are you in? Have you ever had this moment? We're doing this all the time. How quickly can I reduce you down to something that I can rapidly wrap my head around? And it's not just something that we do with the news. This is why things like the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs, they're such fun and helpful tools because we can quickly just gain insight into people. But they are something that's meant to help us understand the bigger idea of a human being when sometimes we're using them actually to the opposite and reducing a human being down. And what maybe could have been seen as a tool for solidarity and helping me find things that connect me to other human beings, driving me to unity, as we said in our definition, is now actually driving me into categorical thinking and giving me eyes to only see uniformity. Who is like me? Who is not like me? Who is right? Who is wrong? And the nuance of what it means to be unified but not uniform is violated. And something's lost. And solidarity, while it's something that all of us want, it's actually impossible. Because what we begin to see as the definition of solidarity is really just uniformity dressed up and parading as solidarity. If we could define it the way our culture sometimes likes to define it, solidarity to them is uniformity with those who agree with me. This is a major departure from what this word actually means. And I would posit to you that uniformity is a villain. Before I invite us to put on our foil hats, I just want to say I don't think that social media is the problem. We are the problem at the end of the day. Social media is just a tool that's magnifying who we are. Okay, now you can put on your foil hats. But we're trying to figure out how to live and work in solidarity, in unity, but not uniformity. How does that work? That's actually really hard in practice. It sounds great, but when the boots hit the ground, now all of a sudden we're life on life, bumping up against each other in ways that are not simple to move forward in. I'm going to invite us today to look at Paul. We're going to read this story again, and actually a little bit more of this story. But as we paint the picture of who he is and what he's doing, Paul is this deeply Jewish man, and he loves sharing about Jesus wherever he goes. But it's hard to describe how offensive this particular story would come across to the typical Jewish person. The fact that Paul is willing to walk around in a town that has idols and shrines all over the place right away, if you're Jewish, you're like, ew, that's gross. And the fact that he's talking with the people that he would be willing to talk to in this story, it would just, oh, that's wrong. Those people are wrong. Those people are other. They are not like us. What Paul's doing in this story is mind-blowingly cool. So let me read this again. I read you about the first half of this story. We're going to read the story in its extent this time. As we often do here, if it's helpful for you to follow along with the words on the screen or in your text, for sure do that. The beauty of narrative is how oftentimes the Lord will want to use your imagination to paint the picture for you. Because it engages other parts of how you learn, your emotions, your senses. So maybe as we read this together today, you close your eyes and you imagine the scene. Acts chapter 17, starting in verse 16, and we'll go through verse 34. The longer Paul waited in Athens for Silas and Timothy, the angrier he got. Oh, those idols. The city was a junkyard of idols. He discussed it with the Jews and other like-minded people at their meeting place, and every day he went out on the streets and he talked with anyone who happened along. He got to know some of the Epicurean and the Stoic intellectuals pretty well through these conversations. Some of them dismissed him with sarcasm. What a moron. But others, listening to him go on about Jesus and the resurrection, were intrigued. That's a new slant on the gods. Tell us more. These people got together and asked him to make a public presentation over at the Areopagus, that's Town Square, First and Main, where things were a little quieter. They said, "This is a new one on us. We've never heard anything quite like it. Where did you come up with this anyway? Explain it so we can understand." Downtown Athens was a great place for gossip. There were always people hanging around, natives and tourists alike, waiting for the latest tidbit on most anything. So Paul took a stand in the open space at the Areopagus and laid it out for them. "It's plain to see that you Athenians take your religion seriously. When I arrived here the other day, I was fascinated with all the shrines I came across, and then I found one inscribed, 'To the God Nobody Knows.' I'm here to introduce you to this God so you can worship intelligently and know who you're dealing with. The God who made the world and everything in it. This master of sky and land, he doesn't live in custom-made shrines or need the human race to run errands for him as if he couldn't take care of himself. He makes the creatures. The creatures don't make him. Starting from scratch, he made the entire human race and made the earth hospitable with plenty of time and space for living so we could seek after God and not just grope around in the dark, but actually find him. He doesn't play hide and seek with us. He's not remote. He's near. We live and move in him. We can't get away from him. One of your poets said it well. We're the God created. Well, if we're the God created, it doesn't make a lot of sense to think we could hire a sculptor to chisel a God out of stone for us, does it? God overlooks it, as long as you don't know any better, but that time has passed. The unknown is now known, and he's calling for a radical life change. He's set a day when the entire human race will be judged and everything set right, and he has already appointed the judge, confirming him before everyone by raising him from the dead. At the phrase, raising him from the dead, the listeners split. Some laughed at him and walked off making jokes. Others said, let's do this again. We want to hear more. But that was it for the day, and Paul left. There were still others, it turned out, who were convinced then and there and stuck with Paul. Among them, Dionysus, the Areopagite, and a woman named Damaris. Paul had a game plan when he'd walk into a new town. There was a way that you would just go about sharing the gospel generally. And you can see this over and over, not just in the book of Acts, but all through the New Testament. And the game plan was this. You walk into town, you find the synagogue. Where are the Jews hanging out? We're going to talk to the Jewish people first. And after we talk with the Jews, one of the things we're going to hope for is an audience to actually public speak, to sit on the bema seat in their synagogue, and to share a message largely from the Old Testament, because that's their language. But as we're talking about the Old Testament, we're going to draw all these ideas of what should we expect the Messiah to be like, this Christ figure. And Paul, and of course any New Testament Christian, would be saying, do you see? Do you see for our people? He's been here the entire time, and now he's arrived, and he's been killed, and he's resurrected, and he's king. And generally, after that moment, whoever was still paying attention, you'd say, let's start a house church, and we can keep telling this story to each other. Because it matters. And there's actually an invitation to obedience and radical life change that we're invited to. Now, here in Athens, Paul begins in kind of the same way. You definitely get the flavor that he's met a lot of the Jewish folks in town. But he keeps seeing all these idols. And he sees how confused the rest of the community seems to be. And instead of just going to these Jewish people and starting there, he begins zooming out. And as he's waiting for his two mentees, the young dudes that he's discipling, Paul goes and makes some friends. Some Epicureans, some Stoics, some Athenian philosophy types. But the thing there is he's not just debating. He's getting to know them. And then he does something that is completely unsurprising in this story. He becomes a missionary. He actually goes on mission. He's thinking as he's walking around town, as he's getting to know these folks, how can I help them understand? But the way that he goes thinking through it is with this lens of what do we have in common? It's so much different than beating them over the head or imposing his beliefs on them. He's thinking through how do I give them an honest invitation? He heads to the Agora. This is, again, town square. He's clearly looking for Greeks. Which is weird, because if you're Jewish, you don't hang out with that type. But it just seems that he's compelled, that he wants to share what he knows. And he really doesn't quote the Old Testament very much through any of the little sermonette that you just heard him give. It's a very different pitch. It's about this transcendent creator, how he is the creator of the cosmos and is knowable by everything he made, including us. But all through it, Paul keeps teasing out this idea of we're all this way. God created all of humanity. He is the creator of every one. He tailor suits a message just for these folks. This is highly philosophical of what he's getting into, particularly if you're an Athenian Greek philosopher. But the crazy thing in this whole sermon that he gives is that he, as a Jewish man, is identifying himself with them the entire time. And he's not just saying, hey, look, here's some common ground between us. The common ground that he's claiming is kinship. We are family. I am an ambassador, not here to beat you up, not here to argue. I'm here as your brother. Holy cow. Aggressive move, Paul. He does all of this by centering their beliefs in his conversation. As he's walking around town, he finds this shrine to an unknown God, and he goes, ah, here's my window of opportunity. But it's through how they think. The fact that he was walking around in their temples, you would not find a Jew caught dead walking in a place like that. He's studying, and if we could add a Bible word on it, he is incarnating, literally being flesh in a world that is not his. He's coming to them. He's being with them. And in the back of your mind, if you're thinking, that sounds a little bit like what Jesus did for all of humanity, then yeah, you're getting caught up in the meta-narrative that's going on behind it all. But can you feel the cultural shift in how Paul is engaging here? Let me say it like this. I have a friend who's on Young Life staff who loves to point out that in Europe, they have some of the most beautiful cathedrals. The architecture there, the stained glass windows alone. But the grievous thing about so many of those cathedrals in Europe is that on Sunday mornings, they sit empty. Why? Because their people got more concerned about defending the church as a monument than they were about creatively moving towards the people around them as a mission. Every church is at risk of that. And if I can be so bold, every believer is at risk of that. And so one of our questions as we're considering, what is solidarity? What is being a missionary? One of the questions we can ask is, are we a people who are about sharing a mission, or are we about defending a monument? And I'm not just talking about the monument as a church building. It's not the barn. I'm talking about how you engage with your beliefs. When faith becomes something that we must defend rather than something that we're foaming at the mouth to share, something is wrong. We've stopped thinking about others and we've centered ourselves in the conversation. That's not how Paul was doing this or how Jesus was doing this. But oh, the joy that comes when what we believe is so infectious. It makes us giddy that we obsess in every moment about how we could possibly share it with someone, that we would be willing to form friendships with people who are not like us, to study how people think, to remain curious about them, but also about what God might be doing in us through them and showing us something totally new. That our fists can come down and instead we can find ourselves wrapping customized gifts for those that we care about. Regardless of how different they are. What's our church about? What's your faith about? I would say here at Discovery, the bones are good, but we're always at risk. And I can say that because of this. Discovery is a church that, it's a non-denominational church, and that's very much by design. It was started by a group of people in what would become known as the Restoration Movement in the late 1700s. And it was a group of Christians who were just responding to the ever-growing number of church denominations. How many times are we going to split the church up before then it's just unrecognizable? And one of the things that they wrote in August of 1794 that became a galvanizing document was something called the Cardinal Principles of the Christian Church. You don't need to memorize this. But I do want to point out some things, and our church, this church, Discovery Church, is built off of this foundation. I want to highlight a few of these things. Essentially, we look for common ground that we won, and you can see it in number one up there. We believe in Jesus. And number three, we trust the Bible. That is fundamental, common DNA that we look for. After that, when your eyes linger over numbers 2 and 5 and 6, and really it's in every single one of these, they're just letting us know that there will be differences, but that they matter far less than the things that unite us together. Are we on the same page about Jesus? And are we on the same page about Scripture? If those things are there, man, just expect it. In fact, 5 says this liberty of conscience or this ability to think for yourself, aka disagree, is actually a privilege and a duty. And heck yeah, I want to be a part of a church that's like, yeah, we actually value that. We wrote that down a few hundred years ago. We're still trying to figure out how to do it, but it matters. That is your job as a Christian. Show up in community, find the common ground, and disagree like crazy. Welcome aboard. It's a wild ride. And you should have places where you disagree. But if the places where you disagree start to overrule the more essential things, if you hold the things that you disagree with the same gravity that you're holding the kingship of Jesus or the authority of Scripture, well, why are you giving those smaller things so much more power? And man, if you're willing to give those disagreements enough power that they would divide you from another Christian, not only are you maybe giving them too much weight, but number six would lead us to believe that he might actually be maligning the witness of the church to the world, and that God's people just become one more place where the hopelessness of the division of the world around us is not just given, is given no more good news. There's no much more hope. It's actually reinforced. We're just broken and splitting. And this is a big moment, not just in this sermon, but for you as you're thinking through this on your own. And the question right now, I think, is this. Are you looking at all of this and are you hearing all of this going, that's nice wishful thinking, but that's not possible? Or could this be realized? Could you actually have a room filled with Christians who have plenty of disagreements, but who are also unified, who a stranger or a passerby would look at and say, man, those people really seem like they're on the same page? How do you even get there? Well, I'll tell you, by being a people who are on mission, not by being a people who are defending their monuments. Part of why we have global partners is that they're a gift to us here at Discovery. They're for sure missionaries. But more than that, they're simply Christians who are considering the same thing that Paul was in Athens. Their solidarity, their kinship, the things that show their unity to everyone in the communities where they live and work and breathe. They obsess over how to share their faith in a winsome way. They study their culture. They form relationships. They remain curious and creative. And it's not surprising in the least that when we look at our partners all over the globe, the way they practice it looks so much different from one to the next. Today, we have a really fun experience waiting for you after church, but perhaps to give you a little appetizer, we asked all of our partners to send in videos answering all sorts of different questions. And one of those questions is, how do you practice discipleship in your particular culture? This is mentoring for those of us that are new to that word. So just as an example, I want you to watch this and see how, if you can hear their desire for unity over uniformity as they're talking here. See if you can spot their practice of being more missional than defending monuments. And especially, I want you to note how similar or unified they are, but also how beautiful the differences of how they're doing it become. Let's hear how our local partners do this.
Hello, guys from Albania. I am Gedis Manka.
Hello. I am Uli Doci.
And I'm Nikki Doci, and we serve with Campus Crusade for Christ.
In Albania.
In Albania.
Yes.
Hi, Discovery Church. We're the Rich family, your global partners in Paraguay. We're here in rural Paraguay. We are missionaries with SIM.
Hola, buenas. Saludos para ti, Kathy, para la congregación.
Hi, we're Bob and Susan Combs, and we serve in Compton, California.
Prayed for a long time, like decades, that somebody would move to her town who loved the Bible. And here God brought us to the house right across the street from her. So we read the Bible just about every day together. We talk and share life and and share God's word.
Follow-up lessons with three new believers. They've all come to Christ within the last 6 months. So we're going through just the basics of the Christian faith.
I got into ministry through my mentors, Raph Osoria, Juwan Cummings, and Chris Ballesteros, showing me how to like be a disciple, being able to be teachable and be able to listen to God's word.
Discipleship in our ministry is divided. We do like personal modelizing. We take a disciple with us and show them how we do ministry. And involve them to share the gospel or make Bible studies with young believers?
So sharing God's word is kind of the center of discipleship with the family.
But that's another way we do discipleship, around the table. That's actually a very, very good way.
Discipleship in our ministry looks very much just like living life together. We spend a lot of time with the youth just hanging out, doing kind of organic ministry, living life together. It's one of the reasons we're so committed to living in Compton, so that we're available to kids.
Also, we do Bible studies in small groups, which can be even like, if we're personal, we're doing it personally, is like mentoring session, or in big groups who are in the same level.
Accompanied them to through hard times in their family, when they had deaths in the family. So it is just doing life together.
So really the taking kids along, taking young men along with me to the job, hiring them, giving them something to do. That's where the discipleship happens. That's the times that it happens, getting people's lives and their whole life.
Ah, can you hear it? And can you see it? What unifies every single one of those stories? Oh, we just love talking about Jesus. We love reading the Bible together. But from there, are we talking about a neighbor? Are we talking about prayer? Are we talking about a campus ministry? Are we talking about sharing a meal? Are we talking about hanging out and giving people jobs? Holy smokes, the differences are there. Even their backgrounds and their technology was different. I don't know if you caught that. Their accents, their skin color. You'd chuckle if you knew how different their politics are. But get this group together and you know what you'll find. A group of people rallying around their community to share Jesus. You'll find unity, but not uniformity. And it's gorgeous. Sky Jathani wrote a book called What If Jesus Was Serious About the Church? And one of the things he says there is this. Unity is not something we can find through common interest, a mutual ethnic identity, a shared political ideology, or even a joint mission. It only comes from abiding in the same Lord. If your church is a homogenous group who all share the same vision of society or politics and culture, and if you chafe at the thought that you might be worshiping alongside someone who voted for a candidate you despise, or if anger arises when you discover a leader in your church prioritizes issues differently than you do, it's a pretty good indication that you haven't gotten onto Jesus's bus. Instead, you may have invited him onto yours. And in case you're not catching the sentiment, inviting Jesus to be a part of your kingdom is not how this is supposed to go. But to get on the bus that Jesus is driving, to see every person, and if you're a Christian, not just the folks who don't believe the same things as you, but even the folks who do, as people to move towards, to find common ground with, to excitedly share a desire for Jesus together, as we'd say, to be all about Jesus and the journey, no matter where people are or where they're coming from. Man, that's good work. But man, is it hard. It's a great idea. When everyone hates hate, awesome to move towards that together, but living into it, whew, you're going to need Jesus. And that's where the mission is. And perhaps today, a good reminder for us is to spend some time not just with our local partners, but reminding yourself that you are also their global partner. You are also a missionary who happens to live here in Denver in the metro area, who is also challenged with living on mission to seek out and celebrate unity over uniformity in the world around you. They are looking to you to see how you practice your faith, how you share it with others, to be encouraged by how you let small things go in favor of highlighting what is essential. And if you have forgotten, I'd just love to invite you. Spend time with them. Thanks to our global team, while you can absolutely go and visit our global partners, they've actually worked really hard today to bring our global partners to you. But more on that in just a little bit. As we wrap up our teaching for today, I just want to underline a basic question. Who are you on mission towards? How are you doing at it? How are you learning? How are you forming relationships? How are you voraciously seeking common ground, winsomely sharing the gospel with people who are different than you? We're going to move into a time of communion now. And so if you're one of our ushers today, you can begin passing. But the whole idea sitting behind communion is that Jesus is saying, this is my body. I'm breaking it into pieces and I'm disseminating it into a room because from this point forward, it is your unity that is my body. It's not just me being broken and shattered into pieces. My wholeness, the wholeness of Christ, is made in the church. The invitation, if you are willing to receive this today, and we'd love for wherever you are on your journey, if you're willing to consider what this means, we'd love to invite you to participate in this with us. Is, are you willing to pursue the unity of who Jesus is over the uniformity of what the culture around us is saying is okay to be unified with? As you hold these elements, consider this question. And in a moment, I'll come back up and we'll receive these elements all together.